Right back to the hotline as we welcome in Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru. Michael, as always, we appreciate the time. And what a day yesterday and what a night last night. Thoughts pouring in all over the place with the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant, his daughter, on a helicopter crash that involved 9 individuals. Just a very, very unfortunate set of circumstances, and celebrities from all across the globe on many social media platforms weighing in on the situation. Michael, your initial thoughts on some of those responses on the passing of Kobe Bryant?
Well, I think like everybody else, just so much shock. I mean, it was such an incredible, shocking thing to hear that news, and the outpouring, not just from fans, but obviously from celebrities and friends, has been really incredible. I think one of the big notable ones is his former teammate and occasional adversary, Shaquille O'Neal, who was just so distraught on social media and very open about it. Former President Obama had some very really nice things to say, which really shows Kobe's impact away from the court. Kanye West called him an inspiration on Twitter and then did a big tribute for him at his Sunday service with Chance the Rapper to honor him. But I mean, really, he sort of, I think, represented so much to so many different people outside of the sports world. I mean, you had people including Taylor Swift, Mindy Kaling, John Legend, Ellen, Reese Witherspoon, Megan Rapinoe, and just like countless others who were expressing their sadness. I think it was certainly also very present at the Grammy last night. I know several people mentioned it, and it kind of came up a little bit in the Nipsey Hussle tribute that they had there. And obviously there were a ton of fans gathering outside of the Staples Center there in L.A. But really, really just a big tragedy, especially for someone who is so well-known and beloved in Los Angeles and Hollywood.
You had mentioned the Grammys last night, and boy, I thought Alicia Keys was just outstanding as the host yesterday. Number one, just incredibly talented. She could do so many different things, but I thought that she in particular was in a really tough spot last night, because that's the kind of award show you're trying to keep it light, but not only are you dealing with that, but, oh yeah, by the way, you're also hosting this in the house that Kobe built in the Staples Center. But I thought, all things considered, Alicia Keys did a great job as the host, and she did about as great a job as anybody could have done under those circumstances.
Yeah, she really did. And I mean, like you said, it was the house that Kobe built in a lot of ways, so there was kind of a pall hanging over everything. But there was also a lot of drama going on behind the scenes at the Grammys, the Recording Academy. In recent weeks, they had their president, Deborah Dugan, was placed on administrative leave for harassment claims. She is contending that she's actually the victim of sexual harassment. So there's a ton of turmoil going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of questions about sort of what direction the Grammys are headed in for the future, as they're trying to kind of reconcile, similarly to the Oscars, an older voting base with trying to keep up with younger trends and you know, be a little bit more a part of the music scene, popular music scene as we know it. But she did a really good job keeping it together, all things considered. I think there were a couple of really great highlights. Tyler, the Creator's performance in particular, was one that stood out to me. Big night, obviously, for Billie Eilish, who had a sweep of Best New Artist, Best Album, Best Record, and Song of the Year. The first person to do that since Christopher Cross in 1981. So a big night for her. And I think the Grammys are always kind of one of those award shows that you either love them because you love all the music there, or you hate them because you don't like the music there. And so it's a really tricky kind of atmosphere. And I thought Alicia Keys handled it pretty well.
Yeah, again, I'm not quite sure how much more she could have done or if she could have handled it any better than she did. Well, this is award season, and none bigger than the Oscars. We are just a little bit less than 2 weeks away. Sunday, February the 9th is when it takes place. And again, it's not going to have a host. And do you get the impression that this is becoming a trend? maybe not necessarily just for the Oscars in particular, but do you think this is the kind of trend that could continue with a host-free award show?
I think so. I think a big thing for the Academy is that last year when they went hostless, they actually saw an 11% increase in their audience after years and years of falling numbers. So it was really big for them to kind of get that boost. So, of course, they're going to try it again if it works so well. But another thing is that, you know, the Oscars notoriously run long and run slowly. And so I think having a hostless format gives an opportunity to kind of put these gigantic movie stars front and center, put the movies front and center, and hopefully get a show that, as the Academy and ABC are hoping for, fits in a three-hour TV viewing time limit. Especially, you know, on the East Coast, those shows can go into 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. It's late, even though it's only like 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. So I think that that's a big factor of just keeping the show moving along. But, it has not always worked. I think we saw at the Emmys this year how awkward it was without a host. We saw, you know, Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg at the Golden Globes last year kind of have a rough go of things as they were, you know, non-traditional hosts kind of stepping in. So I think that there's still a lot of sort of figuring out what works and what doesn't work. But it's a big thing for the Oscars to kind of capitalize on whatever worked last year to get those ratings up so that they can try and continue to stop that slide in the ratings. So I expect to see a hostless format at least until it shows that it doesn't work anymore.
Michael Warshauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Speaking of award shows, this past Saturday, the Directors Guild Awards, and any major takeaways in your mind from that particular award show?
Yeah, I think it's pretty significant that 1917 took away the top prize for its director, Sam Mendes. That basically puts them in the driver's seat as the front runner for the Oscars. They won the PGA, the Producers Guild Award. They won big at the Golden Globes. I think that they're kind of the big front runner. The PGA, in particular, kind of a predictor of who's going to win Best Director. So I think, you know, if you're starting to plan out your Oscar ballots, that would be one to put down as Sam Mendes. I think Parasite probably has the best chance of upsetting it, but I think it's kind of an outside chance at this point. It looks like it's 1917 Oscars to lose. Just really built a ton of momentum here at the end of the season.
Well, at the box office this past weekend, not quite sure if we saw anything in there outside of 1917, which continues to do pretty well, all things considered, since it has been out for a few weeks now. But outside of 1917, not quite sure if there's anything else out there at the box office this past weekend that might be eligible for an award anytime soon. Bad Boys just continues to lead the way. Not really a huge surprise, but The Gentlemen finished fourth in its opening weekend, which seems awfully low considering the hype that it had received going into its opening weekend. Didn't do all that great with the dollar amount, but the reviews seem to be a little bit mixed. What do we know about The Gentlemen?
Yeah, it kind of had some positive reviews. It comes from Guy Ritchie, and it follows an American expat played by Matthew McConaughey, who built a highly profitable marijuana empire in London. And when word gets out that he's looking to cash out of the business, it triggers a whole bunch of plots and schemes and all sorts of things to get his domain out from underneath him. And it has a great cast, including McConaughey, Charlie Hunnam, Henry Golding, Michelle Dockery, Jeremy Strong, and Eddie Marsan. It did have pretty solid reviews. I think Rotten Tomatoes has it at about 75% fresh. But it had good reactions from audiences as well, about a B-plus cinema score coming out of that. It's done pretty well in the UK so far, so it's not kind of a total loss here in the States yet. But it actually was encouraging enough for the studio that they're going to expand its release moving forward. So you might actually see it climb a little bit in the box office next week, perhaps gain a little momentum as people are starting to run out of seeing the Oscar movies. So I could see it being a kind of consistent performer that hangs around. Everything I've heard about it is basically, if you're a fan of Guy Ritchie, if you like movies like Snatch or Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, you're going to love this. It's sort of his classic style and exactly what you come to expect from him. So certainly one to check out if you're an action fan, and one that I think is going to have some staying power for a few weeks.
Any other major takeaways from the box office this past weekend? Like we said, Bad Boys led the way again. Not a total surprise there. 1917 still staying pretty steady. Any other major takeaways from what you saw at the box office?
Not really. I think we have continued to see that Doolittle is a pretty big financial failure for Universal and one of our first major flops of the year. But I do think it is kind of significant that 1917 has continued to be such a strong performer. It really jumped into the Oscar race late. It kind of kicked the door down at the Golden Globes as its arrival. And for a movie that doesn't really have a big top name star at the top of that bill, it's pretty impressive that it's been able to maintain such a run. And I certainly think that plays into its Oscar buzz as well. The audiences have responded so positively.
We are about 10 years removed from Avatar, you know, reaching $1 billion at the box office. And boy, I don't know, I always go back to that, and that's fascinating to me that that's the movie that got past the $1 billion threshold. And, you know, I think it's just, when you look back at that movie, it just, for me anyways, it's hard to believe that that movie in particular made $1 billion. Any idea why that became as popular as it did and raked in so much money?
I think that's a good question, and it's I think particularly fascinating because for as big as it is or was, it doesn't necessarily have the whole hold on the public consciousness the way that you'd expect a movie like that to do. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it really was a visually stunning movie. It sort of ushered in a new era of high definition movie theaters with you know, really great projectors. It had the 3D thing going for it. It was really a cinematic experience to go to see it in the theater, more so than it was to sit at home. I think it's pretty fascinating. I don't know necessarily how the same kind of movie would do today in an era of streaming. I guess we're going to find out because they have two more sequels on the way from James Cameron. So I don't know. I think it just sort of came along at the right time and really sort of set the stage for the major blockbusters that we'd see coming beyond that. I mean, I think the Marvel franchise in particular draws a lot from the spectacle of Avatar that it had. But yeah, certainly a pretty fascinating case study, considering that it really just is kind of, in a lot of ways, a forgotten blockbuster now in 2020.
All right, Michael, before we let you go, we need to get this week's picks to click. What should we be watching throughout the course of the week and into the weekend as well?
Well, one that I forgot to mention last week, the second season of Shrill is now available on Hulu. It's a fantastic show starring SNL's Adi Bryant. The first season was great, and so the second season is definitely worth your time. And this Friday, BoJack Horseman comes to an end. The second half of its sixth and final season premieres on Netflix. So finally the end of the story, or the saga of BoJack.
Very good stuff. Well, Michael, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Michael. Again, that's Michael Warshauer joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.